I knew I had to follow these two fellas, and I was going like, geez, you know, Louise, what are you going to do? And so we have a little something different we're going to do, especially at the end. I'm going to read a few poems that are lighter, a few poems that are darker. But I want to start with a quote from Václav Havel, who actually came to the U.S. and spoke before Congress in 1990 when he was first couple of years he was president of what was then the Czechoslovakia. And the quote is, "The salvation of this human world lies nowhere else than in the human heart, in the human power to reflect on, in human humbleness, and in human responsibility." And I'm going to read a few poems that have to do with vision, humility, and maybe in a way some responsibility or not. So from the kind of a range of stuff. Gatsby comes to PS 147. I know they are sixth graders, as they have that, "We've got to keep every part of our body moving," and they'd slide like molten solder on the floor if I let them. Somehow I don't have lesson plans the first day of class, but start reading from The Great Gatsby. I am Nick Carraway. I am Gatsby. I am Daisy, acting out all the parts. The kids are with me, listening, laughing. I am flying by the seat of my pants. I even pass out all the books. But wait, you can't teach Great Gatsby to sixth graders. The dream, so crazy, like all those times I tried to do the impossible. And for a few moments it worked. Okay. Bernardo speaking Spanish. He's fondling the arm of his best friend's wife in the Capitol Hill restaurant as though it were a joke, not knowing I spoke Spanish, and soon we're all awash in something moist and swarmy I didn't want to know. Bernardo had left Salvador and the Peace Corps just ahead of La Policia Militar, something about helping peasants reclaim the land. I try not to think about those I had to leave behind. It could have been a movie, 40 years ago, shot with real spools of thread, with themes like love and duty. As Bernardo, Tony Franciosa, or maybe Farley Granger. Today it would be video, a demented neo-noir with jump cuts and smash-ups. Bernardo played by Johnny Depp, or maybe John Travolta. Okay. Then I'll come back to that. This is a poem, it's a pretty new poem, and it really goes back to when I lived in New Mexico and I was about 9 and 10 years old. My dad worked at Holloman Air Force Base, and he had a really extraordinary career as in aerospace, starting with working on C-47 during World War II and all the way through the space program. And this is the poem. The experimental plane. At 9, I'd walk through sandstorms with a bloody nose, study the moon with junior binoculars, but hide behind the kitchen door when test pilot Roger Croman showed up drunk. My dad would reassure him that the experimental plane was solid, that he and it wouldn't fall, a fiery weight to Earth. My dad's gone, and I think about gravity a lot. How scientists can and can't explain what it really is. Once my dad took me on the Ferris wheel, we looked down at my mother, a tiny figure on the ground, screaming. Dad said something like, "She gets dizzy, drinking from a tall glass. Once we all remembered July 20th, 1969, we studied the geography of space. Gravitational force equals G times M1 times M2 divided by 2. Don't ask me to explain it. I do have a beer mug kind of trophy on my desk. Manned lunar landing, Hal Bauer, mission control. What if the particles hadn't clumped together? A lifeless universe? My dad would say, in his best Walter Cronkite, funny you should ask, what if there'd been no gravity? Okay. And then and sort of making a turn, this is where the poetry reading does a turn. Okay, I'm really interested in how from World War II through just recently, our attention was really focused on the heavens. We all read, you know, Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury. Maybe many of us read that. Sputnik, the space program, which was not just about reaching the moon, my dears, but it had a lot to do with payload and whether or not we could really go throwing it all at the Russians if we wanted to. But now the attention has turned to the Earth, which seems like a pretty good idea. And so a couple of these poems have to do with that. In 1983, my husband and I went to a place called Arco Santi near Phoenix, where the architect, Paolo Soleri, created something called Arco Santi, a combination, a hyper-intense city, or attempted a city, the whole goal to minimize energy, reduce waste, find if people could really live together. He called it arcology, architecture and ecology. And we were there on Thanksgiving in 1983, and this is a poem for my husband, Paul. Arco Santi. A dusty paint cloth of rust and ochre, the desert before us as we pass shark fins of agave and prickly paired saguaro, at Cordis Junction down a rutted road and your chrome Buick looking for Arco Santi. I remember the loose leaf of your black hair, your nails chewed down, a habit you couldn't break. Behind a sardonic smile, you were a believer, hungry for the sublime edge of knowing. I was a skeptic, pretending a smile while coldly reckoning how soon all this optimism and concrete would just be more riprap on the planet. On the cluttered planet. Among his disciples, we found Soleri, a hair shirt left on the line. And as we cast the silt, he spoke frugality, connectedness. Then in a downpour, we drove back past bristlebrush armadillos to the city of angels bearing the bronze windbell of sea green patina. The agave, burnt yellow in the sun, roots deep. Soleri endures, crowned with a nimbus of hair, his dream no closer. For though we speak of biosphere, of resources sustainable, you knew this, didn't you? You knew. We want the ranch house, the half acre, with an unobstructed view of mountains. Okay. Thank you. Okay. This is a poem about John Berryman, and it comes from having read the book Poets in Their Youth by Eileen Simpson. And it's just a short poem, and I'm just going to read a few more and then do this sort of strange thing that we have cooking for you. This poem is called Flash, and the epigraph is by Berryman, And he said, we must travel in the direction of our fear. Eileen Simpson begins with his photo, clean-shaven, ascetic, but an impish grin, dark suit, bow tie, he's wearing a pipe. How she must have studied that photo. On New York City streets, he'd jaywalk. He was good at dodging cars. She'd watch him correct papers in his red leather chair. They'd dine with Delmore Schwartz, who played her Bessie Smith on the gramophone. When they married, living in a tiny apartment lined with books, they were happy and slim enough to fit in the single bed. Years later, she read about his death in Minneapolis. She hoped it wasn't suicide. Different photograph, ragged beard, empty eyes. His students remember how he said, jokes in the dream songs relieve the tension. He had that odd way of speaking accent on the second syllable of poet. Born in Oklahoma, but he didn't stay long. Thanks. Well, this is a playful poem. Michael, I'm not so nice. Just wait till you hear this poem. okay. This is a poem for a friend of mine, and the poem is called Birthday in Beijing. April thunder clouds and battleship formation, but the rain is light as we touch down. At last, the swarming, noisy, candy-colored streets of the city. Breakfast, soy, boiled eggs, red beans, dumplings, strong coffee, 4 cups. For jet lag, Tiananmen? Closed for renovation and no one is surprised. So our guide, Mr. Ho, distracts us talking about love, Beijing style, how young people pay $11 for a broadcast ad while old-timers dance in the park. There are still arranged marriages. A groom doesn't see the bride until the veil is lifted. That day, Mr. Ho tells us, in China, it's not rude to ask personal questions, even of strangers. That day, Mr. Ho also tells us what features Chinese men most admire in women. Oval face, dimples, small mouth, straight nose. That day, my companion is cranky. I forget my name tag in my room, and again, I don't hear or remember what he's saying. I give up. There must be something neurologically wrong with you that you don't hear me. That day, Mr. Ho explains astrological signs. He asks ours. We tell him, and he laughs. Not the best match. Sorry. Okay, and I think we'll just I'll do a little more serious poem. A couple of you have heard this. Oh, one or two of you have heard this. But I'm going to read it anyway. And this is in the Autumn House collection of poetry exercises. It's in the chapter by Jan Beatty. And it's from an exercise that I did in from her class, in which we were to start with the words, the evening of my best day. The evening of my best day was the color of ice storms, the ground frozen solid, and the black arms of elms reaching skyward. The puppy didn't bark at all as smoke wafted in, and what with after dinner drinks, we were zombies, not to have smelled smoke until the orange lips of fire were almost on us. There is something in knowing you can lose everything, and it is nothing at all, not house, not car, not briefcase, not telephone wire gone dead or peaches left to burn in a cracked dessert plate. We stood outside, snow a foot thick, garden hoses ice solid, extinguishers spent, waiting for the fire trucks as someone tried to pour whiskey down my throat. But all I wanted was water. To have survived, to have my husband beside me, a shivering puppy in my arms, no one burned or broken, that is happiness you don't forget. Not that you fathom it completely at the moment, only later, but even then I did. Yes, I thought it even then. From now on, my body will be lighter than air. And I'll read just one more poem and then the experimental piece. Duckweed, and this was in 5 a.m. I was really thrilled that they took this poem, and they also took that first poem I read, the Gatsby poem. And this poem is called Duckweed. In Branchville, New Jersey, home of Bear Swamp, I'm with my new guy friend, and to prove I'm no stranger to frugality, I find a 57 a night special with a bathroom painted Easter bunny green and a chair that wobbles on funny rollers. We're lucky. We both can sleep through rumbly back road noise, brought knapsacks full of books. I think my friend grew up in a place like this, so different from LA. He hiked, fished, and scouted while I read and wheezed and lip-synced Barbra Streisand. Did he really go ice fishing? What was it like having brothers? The August heat has morphed the daisies, or are they black-eyed Susans into a thousand drooping yellow teepees? I'm learning what grows on backwater ponds and streams. It's worth half-wrecking the tires, driving down this gravel road to find the smallest flowers in the world. What shelters bluegills and bullfrogs? What carries more protein than even soybeans? What we find to sustain ourselves? Double leaves, single root, air pockets so buoyant that the tiny flowers just float. And then I think we'll do the goofball piece here, the who knows what this is, but we'll try it anyway. I'd like to invite Roberta Hatcher and Romella Kitchens up to help me. This is going to be a piece for three voices, and it'll be the last thing I read this evening. So there's a little explanation. Okay, there we go. Okay, this piece has... Okay, we can do that. We can do that. Okay, we'll just turn this in.
I can hear it.
Okay,
it's on.
Good. Okay. This piece started off being called On the Pathos of History, and now it has a title called Ghosts, or maybe both titles. And it came about because I was reading biographies. I was out in California, and I was reading about the fall of the Soviet Union, and I was reading about Gorbachev and about the Havel. And so I thought, you know, we always hear these stories from the point of view of the fellas who led all of this change. We don't hear it from the women very often. So this is a poem or a verse piece or whatever you want to call it in which Romella will be reading the narration. Roberta Hatcher will be reading Raisa Gorbachev, and I'll be reading Olga Havel. And I would point out to you that these two ladies were really extraordinary in their own way, and they both died, sadly, rather young. So, thank you.
Ghost, on the pathos of history, dramatis personae, Olga Havel and Raisa Gorbachev, in the Russian Tea Room on West 57th Street. Olga's sardonic smile, her bird's nest white hair, the glint of Ryesa's luminous eyes have been restored. Olga wears jeans, a baggy cardigan, old espadrilles with socks. Ryesa, the plush weave of Pierre Cardin and pearls. Ryesa studies the menu. Olga twirls a spoon. Chicken Kiev, red borscht, goat cheese blinchik. They'd like to order, but can't catch the waiter's eye.
A railway man's daughter, a working class daughter.
Let's pass the mic. Yeah. Okay, let's just take it out of there.
A railway man's daughter, a working class daughter.
You were more the public person, not a life I wanted.
At the Guggenheim, the Russian exhibit, so many friends and compatriots, but they walked past.
Art from Gulag to Glasnost, somehow I missed that.
It was a day like today, with what Joseph Brodsky would call a floating egg white sky.
I admire his essays, but what to make of those poems?
What irony. Brodsky's revered, while Mikhail Sergeyevich is denounced as a traitor.
Then tell me about the coup of 1991. Were you truly in danger?
We thought we'd be killed. We knew our history.
I heard you met with Nancy Reagan, but didn't get along.
The academic in me annoyed her. Too many questions.
And in Stavropol, you studied the lives of peasant women?
After the war, so many women alone in ramshackle houses, unless they dared give birth to children with an illegal husband.
I wanted to have children, but it was not God's will.
On a cloudy afternoon in Prague, they've waited for spring to walk the seven hills. Everywhere a vista, the river Volterra, and 16 bridges, red roofs, church spires. Raisa wears a wool sweater, khaki slacks, Olga in blue jeans, a dark pullover.
I wasn't surprised how quickly Vaclav married. Who said, what's done out of love lies beyond good and evil?
That was Nietzsche. I agree with Tolstoy. Nietzsche was a stupid man.
They stand in St. Wenceslas Square, close to where, in 1968, Jan Palach set himself on fire. Tourist chatter, cameras clicking, the shuffling of shoes.
I wanted to be an actress. Vaclav hoped to be a poet. He'd read Kafka, Beckett, Ionesco. He knew how a lie begets a lie.
All those years, a playwright without a theater.
We had a cottage in the mountains. Plainclothes police would follow Vaclav even when he walked the dog.
They strolled to the Grand Hotel Europa, past the Art Nouveau lobby with rosewood walls inlaid with ebony, mother of pearl.
Too tempting, all those streetside cafes, roast pork and dumplings.
And cigarettes. In all this wandering, what do you think about? What do you remember?
I think about the patriotic war. We gleaned Siberian fields for frozen potatoes.
I think about that thug, Putin. Now the biggest avenue in Chechnya is named after him.
I think about Yeltsin, that puffed up conniver. There's an old Russian proverb, the fish rots from the head. If Mikhail Sergeyevich had wanted, he could have been a tsar.
Václav wrote about being a fool. A fool, in the spirit of Erasmus, how each of us can change the world.
Some days, I want to stop strangers in the street and say, "Laugh, you idiot." Other days, don't forget the past.
No weapon but a typewriter. That's what I remember. Thank you.